This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this beautiful, and I do mean beautiful, quite nice outside, Saturday afternoon. Drew Mindell, alongside Ezra Ginsberg, producer Remus, as well joining us here in studio. Richie's away from the show for this Saturday. 3 hours of hockey talk, as I mentioned, setting you up, getting you ready for the Winnipeg Jets and the Nashville Predators coming up at 6 p.m. tonight on this fine station. Going to be joined in about 30 minutes by the Nashville Predators radio play-by-play voice, Willie Donick. Also on the show this afternoon, Ken Campbell of the Hockey News, because you know the Jets are now going to win the 2019 Stanley Cup. So says the Hockey News. We'll talk to Ken about that article that came out and made waves in this fine city earlier in the week. And then in the last hour, we head out to the Westman region of the province. Beautiful Brandon, Manitoba. The radio voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, Bruce Lubke, is going to join us, talk about the Wheat Kings, the best team, tied for the best team in the Western Hockey League as they get set for their playoff run. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com. Our question of the day, and this will lead us right into our opening segment, our Twitter question of the day is, can Winnipeg support two professional hockey teams? And that's all stems from the article earlier today, Tim Campbell in the Winnipeg Free Press reporting that the Winnipeg Jets may very well be moving their AHL affiliate to the MTS Center for the 2015-16 hockey season. So the St. John's Icecaps, previously, of course, or who currently are the Jets' AHL affiliate, they're apparently going to become the AHL affiliate of the Montreal Canadiens, thus moving the Jets' farm team from St. John's to Winnipeg, where the Jets have been looking for a closer solution than what is the problems they've been running into in terms of getting players in and out of St. John's, Newfoundland. Ezzy, can Winnipeg support two professional hockey teams? Can the AHL and the NHL both survive here in the city, in your mind?
Yeah, good afternoon, Drew. I think that absolutely this city can support the AHL and the NHL. And I think there are some hockey fans that are waking up this morning, or I guess it's now the afternoon, but waking up this morning when the article was first released by Tim Campbell, and they were a little bit surprised to see that there was a good chance that next year the AHL is coming back to Winnipeg, whether it's called the Moose or the Ice Caps. The fact that the AHL affiliate of the Jets is going to be playing at the MTS Center. But if you think about it, it shouldn't come as that much of a surprise, because last year, True North extended the agreement with the city of St. John's to have the Ice Caps there for one more year. And the agreement was if the city of St. John's and Danny Williams, the owner, former premier of Newfoundland, could find another team who would needed their affiliate to be moved to St. John's, then they would make other arrangements, pardon me, to have the Ice Caps move. And it makes sense for the Ice Caps to move to Winnipeg because you have the infrastructure and everything, the management there to support the team. So, you know, to get back to your question, I think the AHL was a resounding success when it was in Winnipeg after the Jets left originally, and the IHL, I guess, you know, became the AHL in the late 90s, early 2000s. But I think, you know, the debates are going to start about, you know, is there enough of a fan base to support this? I think there absolutely is. Winnipeg is a huge hockey market, especially when you consider that it's only a city of 700,000 plus people. So I think you're especially going to have now an alternative for hockey fans who couldn't get not only season tickets, but maybe can't afford tickets to go see Jets games. You know, you're talking families. It's much more affordable.
Sure.
So I think this is great news. And we're not sure yet if this is going to be a 1 or 2 or 3 year type of situation until another city maybe comes out of the woodworks. But
well, you mentioned that. And I mean, we know that the Jets had been, had reached an agreement with the city of Thunder Bay, you know, that if Thunder Bay was going to get a brand new arena, that the Jets would move their AHL team to that facility. Obviously, Thunder Bay and Winnipeg being close enough that they're made logical sense, and there's enough flights from Thunder Bay to Winnipeg on a daily basis. But it sounds like not very much has happened in Thunder Bay on that agreement. You know, it was expected that the Thunder Bay Arena project, it was hoping to be open in September of 2017, but there's been no funding, there's been no announcement about the project going forward in Thunder Bay, so that seems to sort of be on the back burner of a city, you know, in terms of where the, you know, of terms of the AHL moving there, leaving the Jets sort of, you know, right now it seems, at least in the short term, like you said, don't know if it's 1 year, don't know if it's 2 years, don't know, you know, really what they have in store or what they have planned on a long-term basis. But, you know, right now it seems like might as well put it in Winnipeg and see what you got.
Right. And we were talking about this before the show off air about Thunder Bay. And right now it's really up in the air. We don't know. There's been reports that there have been delays, but I personally don't know enough about it. And I know, Drew, that we're still waiting to hear about the progress of that project. A new 5,700-seat arena was the original idea.
Yeah, I think in this case, it's a situation of no news is not good news coming out of Thunder Bay. Because, I mean, it was, I'm trying to think how long ago, it was over a year ago, it was on a Wednesday when the announcement came out, and we had Leif Denick of the Thunder Bay newspaper, you know, on air to talk about the proposed arena, and, you know, Gary Green was involved in that, in that. And there's been
former TSN analyst, former NHL head coach.
That's right. Yep. You know, and there's been absolutely no news out of Thunder Bay on that, and you would think that if there was anything to announce, if there was a deal to be made there, it would have already occurred. So, you know, the Jets are probably sitting there, well, we made a commitment to Thunder Bay, but nothing seems to be happening, and it seems like the funding isn't necessarily in place for that project. So what are we going to do with this AHL team? Well, let's park it in Winnipeg for a year or 2 years and see if, you know, but, you know, they probably don't need, they don't need 10,000 people a game. They don't need 15,000. They probably need between, I would imagine, $5,000 and $6,000 to, pardon me, five to 6,000 fans to make it viable, just like they did when the Moose were the only professional hockey team in town.
Right, Drew. And something still might materialize in Thunder Bay. At this point, it's really unknown as far as there, a lot of things have to come into place with funding and the stability of the ownership group and all of that. But in the meantime, with the Winnipeg Jets getting an AHL franchise back in their own city now, mm-hmm. it makes so much sense now to have think about how good it is, not just from a logistics point of view. You're saving a lot of money.
Sure.
Instead
travel
of and not just that, but now you have the AHL right there in front of you. So now Zinger isn't traveling as much, you know, Jimmy Roy, Mike Keane, yeah. you know, directors of player development. Now the AHL team is right there in their hometown. And to me, this is great news. It should be great news for hockey fans in Winnipeg now who supported the AHL or maybe even didn't have a chance to go see the AHL. Now they get to learn a little bit more about this league. The greatest feeder league for the NHL always has been.
Sure. The second best professional hockey league in the world.
So now if you...
With all due respect to the KHL, the AHL to me is still the second best right. professional hockey league in the world.
Right. So for example, if you want to see how Scott Kosmachuk or JC LaPone are doing, now you have a chance to go buy tickets and watch these guys play. So for hockey fans, it's win-win.
Yeah, for hockey fans, I think you brought up a good point earlier when you mentioned about, you know, about the fans being able to, you know, that might not necessarily be able to afford going to an NHL game, and there's certainly a lot of them because tickets are, you know, ridiculously expensive in a lot of cases. This is a great way to get, you know, to feel connected with the hockey team, you know, just by watching the junior Jets, you know, let's call, you know, or the junior Moose or whatever they're going to call it. When it's, you know, I'd expect they might very well be called the Manitoba Moose again. I mean, called the Jets, call the Moose the Moose. You know, you get into the arena, you get to see them playing, and you can say, you know, this guy looks like he's ready to take a next step, and he looks ready to, you know, make it up with the big club. And I really like what it means for sort of the youth hockey in Manitoba, where, you know, so many, you go to a Moose game, you know, in years past when they were the only game in town, and the arena is just filled with kids. Just kids who are having the thrill of a lifetime watching, you know, watching these teams nowadays. And they're, you know, when you and Richard coached junior hockey, you guys took your team to some Moose games, if I recall correctly. Am I right?
Minor hockey. We should say it wasn't junior hockey.
Sorry, minor hockey. I'm talking kids hockey.
Yeah. You know,
sorry, that's
no.
What
we
I, that's what
we
I,
absolutely did.
Yeah, and obviously that's not possible given, you know, with the Winnipeg Jets, given the A, lack of tickets, and B, the costs associated. But now you're going to see all these minor hockey teams again be able to get in and see professional hockey being played as a team, and, you know, wearing your, you know, River Heights Cardinals jerseys, or I guess are they the Cordon Comets now, whatever they are, and, you know, and everything else. Getting back to seeing all these kids in the arena again is a really nice touch, I think.
Something I agree with you, and something to notice, I believe next year this would be the only situation where an NHL and AHL team are playing in the same arena.
Sure,
I might be wrong about that, but I believe that's the case.
Because the Toronto Marlies play, of course, at the Canadian National Exhibition.
Right.
They don't play at the Air Canada Center. The Sharks next year? Okay, Remus
right.
is saying that the Sharks, with the AHL's new Pacific Division,
that's right.
the Sharks are going to be playing in their same arena.
So there's only going to be a couple teams that are doing it, but if you think about it, Patrick Williams of NHL.com made a really good point.
Yes, I saw this earlier.
And he's covered the AHL in addition to covering the NHL, and he made a very good point. The whole reason why that California division was put together was not only for logistics and the reduced cost of travel, but because of the ability to put NHL and AHL teams under the same building, and it's obviously this is I saw this news, you know, Tim Campbell broke it in the Winnipeg Free Press. We'll send out the link. I believe Dave Manuk of illegalcurve.com already has a post up about it. It's really good news here. I believe, and again, I think it's great for St. John's because they're going to have the Hamilton Bulldogs, the AHL affiliate of the Montreal Canadiens, moving to St. John's. So the good folks of St. John's aren't losing an AHL team.
Sure.
They're going to have the AHL there next year. Mm-hmm. And we should give them a lot of praise for the way that they've ran the Winnipeg Jets AHL affiliate, because it's been great. They had the run to the Calder Cup final last year. This year they've obviously had some struggles. But having the AHL back in Winnipeg as another alternative for Winnipeg hockey fans, I think is just, it's win-win.
I agree with you there, and I think it's going to be interesting. You know, assume the Moose move here for next year, and let's say it's a year or 2 years, and the Jets might come out and say, you know, it's a short-term answer right now. But it would not surprise me in the least bit if this is sort of a trial balloon. You do a 1 or 2 year trial balloon, see how the AHL works in Winnipeg alongside the NHL, and if it works successfully, you don't necessarily have to look to another market to host your team, like a Thunder Bay. Or you know, you can say, hey, it's been working in Winnipeg. Look, we're getting the 5,000 people per game that we need, and the scheduling works out. That's going to be the difficult part, I think, is the scheduling in and around the MTS Center to be able to allow both teams to play their 41 home games a year, in addition to all the concerts and all the ancillary events that the MTS Center hosts. So that's going to be, I think, a little bit of a tricky aspect, but nothing ventured, nothing gained, I think, for the Jets. And if it doesn't end up working, then you can look for another market to host your AHL team. And a lot of people on Twitter are chiming in, and you can do that at Illegal Curve. They're saying, what about Grand Forks? And what about Fargo? And maybe what about Saskatoon?
Well, here,
what about Regina?
Well, you know, let me step in here for a second. I'm not saying those aren't viable options. It's just we haven't heard them yet. And of course, Grand Forks has the beautiful Ralph Engelstad Arena. Mm-hmm. But again, is the University of North Dakota, who controls the arena, are they interested in that?
Well, if the price is right. I mean, the beauty of UND hockey is huge, of course.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that this would be in direct competition against it, because UND doesn't play very many games at home. It's not
the point, I agree with what you're saying, but the point is everything else aside from the arena, is that set up? Is the management group set up? Is the season ticket base set up? Is there a fan base? And again, I'm not saying that they couldn't support an AHL team, but again, Grand Forks has never had a pro hockey team, sure. Right? We were talking about this off air. Mm-hmm. Whereas, for example, Las Vegas had an AHL team, and St. John's before the Ice Caps had the St. John's Maple Leafs, right?
Sure.
So again, I'm not saying that Grand Forks or Fargo, and then when you talk,
do they want to break new ground when it comes to being a first professional sports team in a new city?
It's,
you know, the same with Fargo. You know, Fargo's got the Fargo Force of the United States Hockey League, but
right.
again, that's not professional
hockey. That's USHL.
The United States Junior League.
I everyone's seen this news today and thinking, okay, well, you know, this is just going to be a 1 or 2 year thing before Thunder Bay happens. I wouldn't be surprised if this is more of a permanent move, and for the time being, stays here.
If it works if they come here and it works for a year or works for 2 years, the Jets certainly wouldn't, I don't think, would be against keeping the team here permanently, because it makes great sense logistically, and it makes great sense to keep a close eye on your prospects to have them in the same city. We'll see if it works, and we'll monitor the situation as developments warrant. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring you an update about what's happening with the Winnipeg Jets lines, what's happening with all the injuries, everything else. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. Some surprises are good, like a big comeback win. Some aren't, like internet overage charges. That's why MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by surprise overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
I won't give you the exact poundage, but we're gonna miss him. He's a force back there for sure. We've dealt with a number of injuries on our back end. We have good people to put in the lineup, and they've played well in one games.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice speaking to the media yesterday when it was announced that Dustin Byfuglien's going to be out of the lineup for 2 to 4 weeks. Brian Little going to be out of the lineup at least for the first two games of this road trip. It might be longer. They're not quite sure yet as he's nursing an injury. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus with you on this Saturday afternoon. And this segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Now, Ezzy, when it was announced yesterday that both Byfuglien and Brian Little are going to be out of the lineup for the next, at least two games, it seemed like a lot of people were wringing their hands and really upset about the Byfuglien news more so than the Brian Little news. I think the argument can be made that the loss of Brian Little hurts the Jets even more than that of Dustin Byfuglien on the back end, losing a centerman, your number one center, a guy who's sort of been the most consistent player night in, night out this season, versus Dustin Byfuglien when you have almost more depth on the back end, especially now with, you can see Trouba and you can see Myers playing more minutes as a result. It seems like the Little loss is just as important and just as harmful to the Jets' playoff chances as the Byfuglien loss.
Yep, absolutely, Drew. And I don't think that you can... I would argue that both players are of equal importance to the Winnipeg Jets. And when you mentioned number one center takes key face-off. Obviously, he's always going to be in key offensive situations, playing on the power play and all that. And the same goes for Byfuglien as far as he gets on the power play and he's going to be put out there in key situations, especially, for example, if you go to 4-on-4 overtime. But let's be honest here. Brian Little's loss is big, as is Dustin Byfuglien's. They're both big losses, especially when you're going up against the Nashville Predators in Nashville. They've only lost 6 games all year at home. Sure, they're struggling, but this is a very talented team, and Peter Laviolette has this team, I believe, ready for the playoffs. I don't think you want to play this team in the playoffs. The Jets have already lost 3 or 4 games against the Predators, but go back to what's first off going on with Brian Little. Brian Little, there's been a suspicion amongst us and many people that he's been suffering an injury most of the year. That might have something to do with the fact that he takes a lot of maintenance days on game day skates. Now, again, that's speculation, but it turns out that something has been bothering him because he did finish the last game against Ottawa.
You could see when he got hit in the corner there. I don't recall the Senators defenseman who got him with a good shoulder, right. But it did look like he winced immediately upon getting hit with that shoulder.
Right. And having said that, Brian Little has had an excellent season.
Yeah.
And last year was his best season in the NHL, and he's continued it this year. Hasn't had very many stretches where he hasn't been one of the Jets' top players, and that goes for the Ladd Little Wheeler line. Now, when you talk about the Winnipeg Jets now going into Nashville without Brian Little and without Dustin Byfuglien, now you have a situation where the fourth line center moves up to the third line center moves up to the second line, and now your lines are a complete mishmash. Tonight, Drew, we're going to see lines, every single line is a fresh line, meaning that none of these lines have played together. And, that can sometimes be a good thing because you find new chemistry and new offensive creativity. But the point being that not only is Ladd Little Wheeler not together, you've really had to move a lot of lines around.
Let me go through the lines because Jets have just finished skating in Nashville, the pregame skate prior to the 6 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 12. Ladd is playing with Lowry and Frolik. So Ladd on the left side, Lowry up the middle, Frolik on the right side. Stafford, Scheifele, and Wheeler. Tolusti, Slater, and Stempniak. Thorburn, Odell, and Peluso. And it's sort of, obviously they're not at full strength. The Jets are without, you know, they're without Brian Little and they're without Matthew Perreault in the lineup. But it just goes to show you how important the acquisitions the Jets have made earlier this season are, because can you imagine this lineup in the heart of a playoff race if you hadn't already acquired Jiří Tlusti and if you hadn't already acquired Lee Stempniak? All of a sudden you're putting in TJ Gagliardi and Carl Klingberg, or player, you know, similar players like of that nature, to play significant minutes against the second best team in the NHL based on record.
Right, and we were kind of speculating that we might even see Paul Postma or Adam Partey back on the left wing of the fourth line, and obviously they've decided to put Adam Partey on the third pairing with Jay Harrison. But
yeah, the defensive pairing, Enstrom and Myers, Stewart and Trouba, no surprise there. Harrison and Partey.
We're going to talk about this later, but since Tyler Myers has come over, he's been excellent, and that pairing with Myers and Enstrom has been very good. The only surprise to me with the forward lines are I thought they might put Ladd and Wheeler up on the first line together with Mark Scheifele between them. What he's doing is he's keeping Ladd and Frolik together, mm-hmm. because Ladd, Little, and Frolik had played together for the last week and a half or so, and now you're seeing Stafford, who's had success with Scheifele. That's what he's doing. He's keeping those two guys together. Mm-hmm. So right now, you don't really have a number one line. You have two second lines.
More or less, yeah. It's not that I'm not concerned, because certainly the Jets don't want to be going into this game tonight without, you know, not at full strength, and they already weren't going to be at full strength with Matthew Perreault out of the lineup. Adam Lowry is such a smart player that, and he's just been such a rock on the third line for the Jets all year round. It's sort of just, you know, you put him there on the third line and they haven't had to worry about him at all. He's in the right places for the most part, you know, 98% of the time. This is a guy in his rookie season. He's such a smart player that I think that the transition to a more significant role with Ladd and Frolik, I'm not concerned it'll be too much for him. I think he's just got such a strong base of hockey intelligence to play with that he can play in any role. Now, obviously, the Jets aren't as good tonight as they are when they are at full strength with Little up the middle there as well. But Lowry, I think, will be able to shoulder a lot of the extra minutes he's going to play, and I don't expect it's going to be a significant detriment to the quality of game that he plays.
Right, and if Paul Maurice is looking at his lineup without Brian Little there, you have to think that he's also trying to match up against two of the best pairings in the NHL right now. Since Cody Franzen has come over from Toronto, he's been playing with Seth Jones, and then sure, Shea Weber and Roman Josi, you've been together for the last 3 years, one of the best D pairings in the NHL. So if I'm Paul Maurice, I'm thinking, I got to spread out a little bit of my offense. Not to say that Jim Slater coming up on the third line along with Lee Stempniak and Jiří Tlusti can't produce a bit of offense, but you need offense from your top two lines, and that's why I think Blake Wheeler has stayed on the second line with Scheifele and Stafford. And I, by the way, think Scheifele and Stafford have been excellent since they've been put together. Mm-hmm. Again, you're going up against two really good D pairings. Even the third D pairing for the Nashville Predators is very good.
Yeah.
So you're in a situation where you're going to have some trouble creating offense against a team that doesn't give you much. And the good news for the Jets is the Nashville Predators aren't playing their best hockey as of late. Five in a row they've lost.
Yeah.
So the Jets can definitely create offense. And I think what the Jets have going for them is that they still have a veteran group that's insulating these youngsters. So you might be a little bit scared if you're going into Nashville with Adam Lowry and Mark Scheifele, 21, 22 years old. I think Scheifele's about to turn 22 years old. But nonetheless, you're going in there with two young guys, but also two guys that, as you've said, have shown that they're able to step up to the challenge. I mean, Adam Lowry has been the third line center the entire year, mm-hmm. and he's done an admirable job, and he's had different line mates. Chris Thorburn's obviously been up there for the last couple months. But I think, you know, with this combination, you know, to me, I'm not worried about the D pairings, because I think Jay Harrison and Adam Partey back there, I'm not worried about that at all. And Michael Hutchinson, I'm not worried at all about some type of carryover from the game where he was pulled against Ottawa. To me, it's all about, are these lines tonight, Drew, going to be able to gel quick enough to really put a dent in the Nashville Predators? Because as we know, this team does not give you a lot.
Yeah.
They just don't, and it doesn't. And sure, I know they've lost a few games here. They lost to the Islanders. Islanders are a good team. They've lost to some good teams. It's not like they're getting beat by bad teams, maybe with the exception of they lost to New Jersey the other night. That's not a very good team. But I think, you know, putting Wheeler with Scheifele, you ensure that that line has enough speed and scoring. And Frolik and Ladd have been playing together with Little, so then you just move Lowry up there, and then you give that line some size and some toughness. So I think the Jets aren't as bad off as people are making it out to be. I mean, I don't think the Jets are going into Nashville and they're going to completely get thumped out.
Well, you know what it is? It just speaks to, I think, the difference. There's more depth on this Jets team. You know, in previous incarnations, in previous years, earlier this year, you lose a guy, you lose two guys off your roster, and they didn't have anyone who could backfill those spots legitimately. And now they have, you know, obviously it's not as good as you would hope. They're not at full strength, as we mentioned, but you have bona fide NHL players who can still step in. You look at the roster and you don't necessarily have to play guys only 3 minutes.
Right.
You know, you can play guys, you know, you're not going to be running really a two-line team. You know, your third line of Tolusti, Slater, and Stempniak, well, that's an NHL. Still an NHL third line. And Thorburn, Odell, and Peluso, you know, Thorburn, you know, those guys have played all year round. Odell, obviously, not as much. But it's not really as dramatic of an effect had it been 2 months ago, where you got guys being called up from St. John's who you can't really put into the lineup and you can't really trust to play significant minutes. We'll see what the Jets can do. You know, we've seen all the other Western Conference teams in the playoff race suffer some sort of injury and responded well in the face of adversity. Now it's the Jets' turn to try and do the same tonight against the Nashville Predators. Puck drop is 6 p.m. on this station. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk to Willie Donick, Nashville Predators radio play-by-play man. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Twelve 30 in the afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside analyst Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the Nashville Predators radio play-by-play voice, Willie Donick. Willie, good afternoon, and thanks very much for doing this.
Hey, no problem. Good to talk to you guys.
Likewise, Willie. We tried to have you on, I guess it was about 3 weeks ago or so, when Evander Kane got traded, so we're pleased we could do it today instead.
Yeah, I was thinking I might slide down on the priority list that day.
Yeah, it was one of those crazy days in the world of hockey that we know so well. Willie obviously brought you on preview tonight's Jets-Predators game. Predators going through a little bit of struggles right now. 5 games in a row that they have lost. You know, sort of serious, anything serious to be concerned about, or just a function of a team that's, you know, getting ready and, you know, ready to rock for the playoffs after having been dominant throughout the course of the first 60 games this season?
Well, I think, no question, when you lose 5 in a row, everybody starts questioning everything. But I think when you look at the big picture, it might just be a team coming back to earth a little bit. Peter Laviolette said, well, he said, the first 60 games, I don't know that you could have written a better script for the team. I think anybody who was trying to be realistic would have thought the Predators had overachieved to that point. But that being said, I think there's a lot of things that they have to start doing better if they want to continue on with a really successful season. And I think it all starts with getting off to better starts. That's been the theme of all of the losses, is getting into a hole. The last 4 games, they've been down 2-0, and they've given up the first goal in the game the last 10 games.
It's really incredible if you think about it, Willie. You know, I wanted to ask you about going back 3 weeks when the Nashville Predators made that big move with the Toronto Maple Leafs acquiring Cody Franzen, who, of course, was drafted by the Predators along with Mike Santarelli, and then sending Olli Jokinen, a first-round pick, and Brendan Leipzig to Toronto. How have those players fit in, especially Cody Franzen coming back to his old team?
I think it's been an adjustment for both of them. I think they're both doing fine. And I think they both will play better hockey as the team starts playing better. And it's unfortunate for them, because the losing started right as they basically got here. And so there's a lot of people saying, well, what's going on with that? But I think if you look a little deeper, the system that Toronto played was quite a bit different than this system. So Cody Franson in particular, I think it's had a little bit more of a learning curve. Some of the nuances that Phil Housley likes his defenseman to do, but he's starting to pick it up. I thought his game against the Islanders two nights ago was probably his best game as a Predator. He looked more like Cody Franson, you know, snapping off those long passes tape to tape, getting that quick shot off that he's got. I think it'll start coming around for him as he gets to play more, and I think they've settled in. Now that Ryan Ellis is back in the lineup, it looks like, at least for the time being, they're going to reunite Ryan Ellis and Matthias Ekholm, who were dynamite before Ellis got hurt, and put Cody Franson with Seth Jones, which ought to give you three pretty good defense pairings if everything lays out, if they can get Ellis back up to speed.
You know, Willie, obviously a lot has been made out of Peter Laviolette and how good of a job he's done coaching, and rightfully so. The Predators are one of the top teams in the Western Conference and the NHL, but I guess less talked about is former Winnipeg Jet Phil Housley. What kind of impact has he had on some of the defensemen, especially Seth Jones?
I think a big impact. I think, number one, he's been given the green light from Peter Laviolette to give the defensemen the go-ahead. In other words, they can jump into the play. They want those guys jumping into the play. You'll see them, especially a guy like Roman Josi or a guy like Seth Jones who can really skate, they will jump in there and become part of the rush. They're not afraid to do that. And I think Phil Housley, that's how he likes to play, and I think he's really good at teaching that style of play. And this group is still very young, even though they played so well. I think he feels like there's more for all of those guys to learn, especially a guy like Seth Jones, who's just 20.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Willie Donick. Willie is the Nashville Predators radio play-by-play voice. The Jets and the Preds, 6 p.m. tonight from Nashville, of course. You can hear the game live on TSN 1290. Willie, the trade deadline, I mean, it was only really 6 days ago. It seems like it was about 3 weeks ago. The season moved so quickly. Predators were one of the few teams in the NHL not to make any moves either the day of the deadline or within the last couple days before. Obviously, they made their big splash getting Franz and Santarelli earlier on. You know, how surprised were you that they decided to stand pat on Monday with the trade deadline?
Well, I wasn't surprised only because David Poile pretty much made it known that unless something just blew him away, that Santarelli and Franzen were the two guys that they wanted most. They gave up, in their mind, pretty significant assets to get them, a first-round pick, and Brendan Leipsic, who they think is a pretty good prospect. And they didn't feel like they wanted to add any more to the room unless somebody got hurt. They were thinking maybe, and I think you go back to 2012 with this team, they probably added too many guys. If you recall, they brought back Alexander Radulov. That had its moments, and I stand. It maybe people remember the last part more than anything else.
Yeah.
It blew up in the second round against the Coyotes, but I'm not sure they would have beaten the Red Wings as easily in five games had it not been for Radulov's presence. But in bringing in Radulov and Andre Kostitsyn and Hal Gill, they crowded their locker room a little bit. They were scratching guys like Craig Smith and Colin Wilson in the playoffs, Jordan Tutu. So they had to make some tough decisions because they almost had too many guys in there. I think they were wary of that when they added the two guys, and I think they felt like they were good to go with the guys that they had.
Willie, sticking with the same sort of idea around trades and roster flexibility, you look at the Predators up the middle. I mean, Mike Ribeiro has had a great bounce back year. And then there's sort of, you know, Mike Fisher and Cali Yarncroc and, you know, Paul Gostad are your four centermen on the roster. Are they good enough to go up against the best centermen in the Western Conference? You know, you look at St. Louis and their depth up the middle and Anaheim with their depth, you know, Kessler being their second line center. You know, is there any fear that the Preds centermen just, you know, aren't going to match up well against the rest of the best of the Western Conference when push comes to shove in the playoffs?
I think that's probably the biggest weakness people have thrown out there on this team, and I think it's a fair question. I think it's worked well because they've gotten a lot of mileage, especially at home when they have the matchups in the last change. They get a lot of mileage out of Paul Gostad's line because they put them up against the other team's top line. You'll see it tonight when they play the Jets. They'll match them up with the line that they want to try to shut down, And that usually means better matchups for guys like Yarncroke, Fisher, and Ribeiro. Ribeiro is not a guy that, you know, is like a Ryan Getzlaff. He's not a shutdown guy. You don't want to have him up there in the defensive zone. So that's one of the reasons that Ribeiro has been so successful, is because they get the mileage out of Gostad. So it's worked. Can it work in the playoffs? It sort of remains to be seen. But if that's the only weakness, then I think you try to, you know, I think any team could have some weakness in there. I think the key for the Predators is to get back to that great defensive game where the six defensemen, who I think are as deep as anybody in the league, can play the way they were playing earlier in the season, maybe work Frampton in there a little bit more, and get Pekka-Rinne back to playing at the championship level he was playing at.
Willie, I imagine you've spent tons of time this year talking about him on air, but I got to ask you about him because he's really having an unbelievable season. That's, of course, Philip Forsberg, and I know he's struggled a little bit lately, but he's clearly the front runner for the Calder Trophy with 21 goals and 53 points. How fun has it been for you to watch such a talented rookie play this year, and how does he really allow the Nashville Predators and Peter Laviolette to play that type of fast-paced, up-tempo game that they like to play?
Well, for years, as you can imagine, I think it's been the rap not only nationally or, you know, around the league, but also locally, is they haven't had a guy like Philip Forsberg very often. Now, they did have Paul Kariya for a couple of seasons. Steve Sullivan for a couple of years was a lot of fun to watch. Radulov, when he first came up, was exciting. But just the flair of Philip Forsberg, he's a guy that's got style. He makes plays that you shake your head and go, how did he do that? They just have not had that type of player with that type of creativity very, very much. So I think from just an artistic standpoint, it's made the team a lot more fun to watch. And it fits right in with the way Peter Laviolette wants to play, with that aggressive style, that offensive style. And yeah, he's tapered off just a little bit, but if you take a look, he still gets his chances. And he's had some great plays where the goalie's made a good save on him, or he's made a great pass, and the guy hasn't finished. He's probably due to come back around and get that production back up. But, boy, he's just very unique in the way he's smooth with his skating. He's got a quick release with that wrist shot, and he just has creative ways to try to beat a defender one-on-one.
Willie, I guess he's made up a little bit for the loss of Martin Irat, then, you'd say?
I would say so. I'll tell you, the Predators were about as down and out as you could be 2 years ago in that lockout shortened season, when the wheels were falling off and you looked around and you said, is it really going to get any better going forward here? This team looks like it's heading in the wrong direction. But they made that move, Erat for Forsberg, basically, and it took a year because last year Forsberg really wasn't ready. He didn't play more than just a handful of games. He didn't look like he was going to blossom into the player that he's become. But you take that and the flipping of David Legwand for Cali Yarncroke, and Yarncroke hasn't lit up the scoreboard, but he's given him another really solid player, two-way player, that they think will score more eventually. And all of a sudden, the everything looks right in terms of the talent and the balance of young players and veteran players.
Yeah, David Poile, the Predators GM, doesn't have to look far to see the perils of sometimes making a rash and a trade deadline deal. And obviously that's Forsberg for Erat, something that's going to be on George McPhee's obituary page for a number of years. a former Washington GM there, of course. Willie, we'll let you go on this last question. You mentioned the Predators have to get Pekka-Rinne back on track. I mean, for the majority of the year, he's been either the best or the second best goalie in the NHL, depending on how you feel about Carey Price. If he isn't the best or the second best, if he's the fifth best goalie or the seventh best goalie in the league come playoff time, how much trouble are the Predators in as a result?
You know, I think that's a good question. I think any team has to have their goalie playing well. Now, Pekka playing well is probably better than some goalies at their best, but Pekka playing at his best really can erase a lot of mistakes. And lately, I don't think he's played bad at all, but it just shows that he's human. And when he's down a level, you look around going, wait a minute, how did that go in? That usually doesn't go in. And so the goals against average in this losing streak has gone up a little bit. I think everybody hopes that you get it out of your system now, get back in the groove at the right time, and have him playing the way he's capable of as you go into the postseason. But it's interesting. They had a cushion. I'm not sure if they let off the gas, but they had a 9-point cushion on St. Louis not that long ago. Suddenly it's 4, and the Blues have 2 games in hand. So now you're back in a dogfight to to try to win a division, which is something this franchise has never done. They have no banners up in the rafters because they've never won a division. They've made the playoffs 7 times, but they've never won a championship of any kind in terms of a division or a President's Trophy, anything like that. So all of a sudden, anybody that has some aspirations has got to pull back and say, hey, still a lot of meat on the bone if you want to do that.
Willie Donick is the Nashville Predators radio play-by-play voice. He joins us this afternoon from Nashville. Willie, appreciate your time and enjoy the call tonight.
Okay, guys, thanks for having me on.
Thanks very much, Willie. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
You're listening to TSN 1290, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program is brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226. Or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Big thanks to Willie Donick, Nashville Predators radio play-by-play voice, for joining us on the previous segment, talking about, obviously, the Jets and the Preds tonight, 6 p.m. on TSN 1290. Preds lost 5 in a row, is he? How much nervousness do you think there is there as a result of that losing streak? It's just a function of, you know, they're waiting for the playoffs, they're ready to go.
I think it is a function, a little bit of that, and as John Glennon, who kind of half covers the Predators now, wrote about
for the Tennessean.
Yeah. Part of it has to do with a tired team. They've played 5 games in 8 days, which every team has to go through.
Every team.
But you see the effects of that sometimes on these teams. And really, Drew, this is the only time this year that the Nashville Predators have faced adversity in the form of a losing streak. They've faced adversity with Mike Fisher being injured. Pekka Rinne was injured around the All-Star break.
Yeah.
They've faced adversity in that sense, but they really haven't had any losing streak like this at all. And as we mentioned, you've lost to some good teams here, the Red Wings, you've lost to the Rangers. The Devils game that I watched, unfortunately, just because I'm a glutton for punishment, I was watching that game and, I was really shocked that the Predators lost that game. But, the New Jersey Devils, they're still playing in theory for a playoff spot. They're obviously not going to make the playoffs, but they're also not tanking, so they're still trying to win games. But back to your original question here, I don't think the Predators are that worried here, with this losing streak. The Predators are firmly in a playoff position. Now, though, Drew, you're a little bit nervous because now Chicago and St. Louis...
Well, if St. Louis won the 2 games in hand that they have on the Predators, they wouldn't overtake them because the Predators still would win the tiebreaker on the regulation wins, but they would be tied in the actual points.
No, you're right. They've got games in hand, and they're only 4 points behind the Predators.
Ask Jets fans what games in hand does to you all, and we'll talk about the Western Conference playoff race.
And it's also a killer when you're sitting there not playing, and other teams are picking up points on you. And Chicago's starting to play a little bit better. They've won 2 in a row. The St. Louis Blues are having their own struggles.
Yeah, they're only 5-4-1 in their last 10.
Right. They're not exactly pulling away. Nobody's really pulling away in the Central Division. And this might be a preview for the Winnipeg Jets of a first-round playoff matchup. And the Jets might have lost 3 of 4 games so far against the Predators. But as far as I'm concerned, the last game, they could have easily won.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see that last game, but my understanding was the Jets played pretty well. Pekka Rinne was the difference maker in that game, and that was obviously when he was still, he was playing at 100%. If the Jets are catching the Predators at a bit of a downturn, and maybe they're catching Pekka Rinne when he's, not at his utmost, goaltending skill wise, then the Jets might be able to take advantage of a bit of a weakened opponent tonight.
Absolutely, and
not that the Jets themselves aren't weakened with all the injury deficiencies they have on their roster.
Right, and this time of year, you really don't have any team, with the exception of a few teams that have minor injuries, but you don't have any team that isn't going through some type of adversity with injuries.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen it time and time again.
Calgary just keeps winning hockey games, and they lost their captain and their offensive catalyst in Mark Giordano on the back end, and they go into Boston and they win in a shootout, and tremendously impressively. They go into Detroit on the second half of a back-to-back last night, and 5-2, score five unanswered goals against the Red Wings?
Well, this is the NHL, Drew. The Calgary Flames aren't, and I know you know this, the Calgary Flames aren't going into Detroit or into any game and saying, oh, we have no chance because our captain and our best player is out. I mean, these guys have pride. They want to go in and win. They not only do they want to go in and win for themselves, they want to go and win for Giordano,
sure,
who's obviously watching them play and who can't, it kills him that he can't be on the ice. But for the Winnipeg Jets, this game is clearly important because of the way that they played against Ottawa and the unfortunate result they got. And
I thought they played well against Ottawa.
No, I'm just saying, that's what I'm saying, because of the result that they got, mm-hmm, not the way they played well. They should have won that game. Andrew Hammond stood on his head and made some highlight reel saves, but it's because you didn't get any points in that game, and you played well.
Sure.
So the Jets, this is a must-win. And there aren't any games that aren't must-win for the rest of the season. You've got the St. Louis Blues coming up. It's not going to get any easier for the Jets.
No, that's not. Let's hear from Pierre LeBrun. He was on Hustler and Lawless yesterday afternoon. He spoke about the Nashville Predators and their recent struggles.
Hard to tell, you know. Every top team has sort of gone through this little doldrums of the dog days of the season. Teams like the Jets don't have that luxury. But when you're at the top all year, Chicago, as you remember, went through this. I mean, the Jets beat Chicago a couple times. Chicago went through a whole month where they just looked bored. The Blues had their part of that. Anaheim went about a month and a half where they were kind of off. They're just coming out of it now. I think it's just hard to go wire to wire and keep that hunger and that focus going for all 82 games when you're not in danger of not making the playoffs. So, the Predators have been in first all year, and I just feels to me like they've kind of come off their focus here, and I got to think five straight losses will probably snap them out of it. So the Jets are probably not getting the Predators at the perfect time, because I think that's going to be a pretty hungry Nashville team tomorrow night.
Obviously, the Jets fans hope that the Predators snap out of it after a six-game losing streak, but we won't find that out till about 8:30 or 9 o'clock tonight when that game concludes between the Jets and the Preds. It's a high-class problem to have. To be the best team in the league for the majority of the season, certainly they've been leading the league. It's only until recently that Anaheim has overtaken them for the most points in the entire NHL. It's a high-class problem to have that the Preds, struggles right now, five-game losing streak, isn't the end of the world. Whereas, if the Jets or any of the other teams, sort of that are fighting for the final playoff spots in the Western Conference were to undergo a five-game losing streak right now, it would be the end of the world practically.
But Pierre LeBrun touched on it, Drew, and we just mentioned it before we played that clip. I mean, every single team is going to have a portion of the season where they're not playing their best hockey and they're not picking up points.
Uh-huh.
Now, do you want to preview or foreshadow what's going to happen tonight by saying that the Predators are going to be so angry that they're going to whip the Jets? Now, I don't think you can really say that, because the Winnipeg Jets played very well, and I think we've seen them respond, especially after the Toronto game, where they played very well against Dallas on the first game of the homestand, and they were hungry. I mean, I think the Jets are equally as hungry to get these points here. The Winnipeg Jets have seen in the last 2 days, because they've been off for 2 days,
sure,
since the last game, and they've seen teams like the Minnesota Wild and the Calgary Flames pick up points, LA Kings pick up points, so they want to get into tonight's game, and they want to prove, they want to get off to a good start,
mm-hmm,
and prove that they can obviously withstand the injuries and get the 2 points for Little and Bufflin, who aren't able to play tonight. So I think that It's going to be a tough game. I mean, I have concerns, especially when you have lines that we haven't seen before. Even though there's no worry for me that Adam Lowry can't step into a first line center role or a 2A center role.
Sure, call whatever you like,
because he's done it before. Not this with the Winnipeg Jets, but he's played those types of minutes in situations in the WHL and everything like that. So I don't think that you're throwing Adam Lowry to the wolves. I think he's fully capable. And Paul Maurice has shown all year that he's very comfortable putting Adam Lowry in a variety of situations. So I think this is going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a one-goal game. We know that the Jets, I think 7 or 8 of their last 12 games have gone to overtime. And I think there's – and the thing to me, I would be a little bit worried if the Jets weren't playing – really at their full capabilities, and they were taking penalties like they were 3 or 4 weeks ago. The Jets have been staying out of the penalty box.
Sure.
They've been playing their type of game. They've been using their speed. The defense looks great. I think Tyler Myers right now he's playing like a top 10 defenseman.
Well, we'll talk about the additions that the Jets have made. And I mean, you look at the Jets blue line tonight, and obviously, you know, not as deep as they would normally be without Dustin Byfuglien in the lineup. But, you know, what you're going to see, I imagine, is you're going to see Paul Maurice really use Jacob Trouba and use Tyler Myers and use Toby Enstrom, and, you know, to some extent also use Mark Stewart in a more significant role. You know, Myers and Trouba can certainly play heavier minutes than they have been playing as of late. So now, you know, the depth that you had on your right hand, on your right side, is a little less without Dustin Byfuglien in there. You know, so what do you do? You rely on Jacob Trouba. You rely on Tyler Myers to play bigger minutes against a Nashville team that isn't offensively dominant by any stretch of the imagination. They're very good, but they're not a bruising, you know, wear you down, wear you out kind of offense. They can still be, you know, you can control Philip Forsberg and you can control James Neal, and those are the guys you're most concerned with. Mike Ribeiro's obviously got a tremendous skill set, but is Mike Ribeiro, you know, you can neutralize, I think, the Predators' offensive weapons with smart, successful defensive play.
Right, and if you're talking about the defense combinations for the Jets against the Predators, I think you're going to see Tobias Enstrom and Tyler Myers up against that top line of Ribeiro, Forsberg, and Smith, because that's the more skilled line, and Enstrom and Myers can skate with them, and I think you're going to see a heavy dose of Stewart and Trouba against Mike Fisher's line with Colin Wilson, who just scored his 20th goal of the year, along with James Neal, and I think you know James Neal's got some size, as does Wilson, and I think Trouba and Stewart are the more physical pair as compared to the Enstrom-Myers pair, and I think they'll be all right. I think it's going to be a tough climb here for the Jets on this road trip, but I think that the Jets have shown that there aren't many teams that scare them this year. They haven't gone into the United Center like previous mm-hmm. years, and I know I go back to that constantly, but those games to me have really shown that the Jets can skate with these teams, and going back two and a half weeks when they went into Nashville, lost 3-1, but they skated with them, and they got just as many scoring chances. Pekka Rinne played really well. That 3-1 loss could have easily been a 3-1 win, so I'm not worried. I think the Jets have a good chance here. It's going to be an opportunity for some defensemen to step up. It's going to be an opportunity for Adam Lowry to get more minutes at center. I think they'll be fine.
We'll find out starting at 6 p.m. tonight here on TSN 1290. Let's head to break, and when we come back, Ken Campbell from the Hockey News is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Joined in studio by analyst Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Producer Remus is getting us on and off the air throughout the course of the day. This afternoon, the Jets and the Preds, 6 p.m., of course, on this fine station. Going to be speaking momentarily with Ken Campbell of the Hockey News. The Meet Your 2019 Stanley Cup Champions. So have you decided where you're going to sit yourself on the parade route?
Yeah, well, it's funny. You know what, Drew? We were talking about this. Rick and I were talking about this on the pregame show with Tim Campbell on Wednesday night before the Ottawa Senators game. And I think people were taking that title, the headline, if you will, of the story a little bit too seriously. It was very tongue-in-cheek. And
you think it's tongue-in-cheek?
I don't think the Hockey News is actually predicting them to be the Stanley Cup champions in 2000.
I think that's exactly what they're doing.
No, absolutely. Then you're one of the people that completely misunderstood it.
Oh, apparently you're apparently one of the few who didn't misunderstand.
Well, first off, does the Hockey News do that every year? No.
Well, I mean, I think they're saying that the Jets, if their prospects develop in the manner that they're going to, there'll be the 2019 Stanley Cup champions.
But they're not. It's not a hard. Well, they're going to win the Stanley Cup in 2019.
I think that they're saying that if the Jets have the prospect group necessary to be the team that wins the Stanley Cup.
Well, first of all, you can't predict who's going to win the Stanley Cup.
Of course you can't.
Right. So there's your answer right there. Well, it's tongue in cheek.
I mean, you know,
if you can't predict, then why is it?
I think it's tongue-in-cheek, but they're right. They're writing that they're the Stanley Cup champions 2019. I think you're missing the point
here. Whose voice is that? Who gave Remus a microphone?
I think people are taking it a little bit too literally, and the point was more so that the Jets have excellent prospects and not so much that the Hockey News believes that the team is on the – and again, I'm not trying to put put a negative spin on this. I'm just saying that I think the focus should have been on the fact that the Jets are going in the right direction and their prospects are really good. I don't think that they were trying to be really held to that prediction is what I'm saying.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, it's a differing of opinions. I think that they, I think it speaks to the organization's success. And I'm not going to use the term draft and develop because every single NHL team drafts and develops. It's not a revolutionary strategy. But regardless, that's another rant for that. I'll go on another day in time. I think it speaks to the organization's skill at what they've been able to unearth in the NHL draft thus far. And I mean, we talked about it just, looking at the game against the Predators. Like you said, Mark Scheifele, he's just turning 22. I believe it's next week he'll turn 22. Adam Lowry, his first year in the NHL. 20, 21 years old. He's certainly also got, a great skill and a great future in the NHL. And I think it's just another feather in the cap of the scouting, drafting, department for the Winnipeg Jets that they're recognized throughout the NHL as being very good at identifying young talent, or they're expected to be very good at identifying young talent.
Right. That should be the focus. Not that the Winnipeg Jets, we should be thinking that the entire hockey world thinks that they're going to win the Stanley Cup in 2019. That's what my point was. And you're right, Drew. If you look at some of the drafts in previous years, starting with Jacob Trouba, drafted 9th overall in 2012, and Mark Scheifele, 7th overall in 2011, and Nikolai Ehlers at number 9 in the 2014 draft, and then you throw in some of the prospects that Kevin Cheveldayoff was able to acquire in Brendan Lemieux and Joel Armia, mm-hmm. and the Winnipeg Jets were already considered to have top prospects without Brendan Lemieux and Joel Armia. So it's very nice to know, and you throw in guys like Tucker Poolman, who Tim Campbell wrote about, and Guy Flaming talked about on our show as being kind of like a mini Buff or a young potential Bufflin type of player. Mm-hmm. You throw in prospects like that, and you throw in Nick Petan, and you throw in guys that aren't even considered on the top 10 list, like Jamie Phillips and Michigan Tech, who is right now rated the third top goalie prospect behind Connor Hellebuck and Eric Comrie. I mean, the Jets have filled the cup. The cupboard is full. The cupboard is overflowing right now for the Winnipeg Jets. So
there was a much ado earlier in the season when it came out that, the Jets are not an appealing destination. A lot of players have no trade clauses towards coming to Winnipeg.
I think winning changes that.
I think winning certainly changes that to some extent as well, especially if you're trying to acquire winners. Winners will play where with a good franchise that's winning, regardless of where that franchise might be. Guys who are more interested in collecting a paycheck and living in South Beach may not be that as interested, and that's their prerogative. I'm not saying, yay or nay to those players. But where there's an even playing field, but where an organization can make a real difference and there's no salary cap restricting their movements is when it comes to scouting and where it comes to drafting and where it comes to development. The Jets, are not run by foolish people. They know that it's unlikely they're ever going to be a top destination for free agents, and that's not where they're going to make their most hay as an organization. But we can go out, and we're going to outspend some of our rivals when it comes to identifying talent, in the NHL draft. And we can go out and we can get guys deeper in the draft than other teams that may only take one visit to go see a guy who's playing in some far flung location and not going to see him, they're only going to see him when they're playing at some tournament. They're not going to go see him play a league game in some random city. The Jets can spend more if they want, and it seems like they have to be so successful at drafting, based on the Hockey News analysis here, that they've been so successful. It tells me that the Jets are probably spending more than necessarily some of the other teams in the NHL to find these talents, to find these diamonds in the rough, as they like to say.
Right, and I agree with that, but you obviously still have to trade and sign players, and
certainly.
I think that you look at how they've done with Matthew Perreault, for example. Sign him. Matthew Perreault wanted to come to Winnipeg,
sure.
So he signed a 3-year, $9 million deal, and that's being considered one of the best signings of the 2014 offseason. So sure, I mean, they have done a great job of drafting players over the last 4 years since they've come over from Atlanta, and they did a pretty good job drafting players in Atlanta. Unfortunately, too many first-round picks had to play in the NHL, and that's where you kind of ran into trouble. And if you don't nail those second and third round draft picks, then you're going to run into some trouble. But I think that you need to look at, again, I think the Winnipeg Jets, I'm not saying that the Winnipeg Jets can't compete for a Stanley Cup 4 years from now. I'm just saying I think you should take this article with a grain of salt and take it for what it is. And it's saying that the Winnipeg Jets are going in the right direction and they have a really good group of prospects.
Yeah, I can't argue with your point there. I mean, I do think that, yeah, you know, obviously the Hockey News is in the business of selling magazines.
Right.
So they're, you know, they make a splash, and I bet you, I'm not sure if this is even available on newsstands in Winnipeg yet or not, but once it is, I'm sure it won't be there for long. People are going to get their hands on
it. It's probably going to be the bestseller.
Well, you know, we saw a different magazine, a different national magazine, more of a current events magazine, try and make headlines earlier this year by saying something negative about Winnipeg. So this is a different
national... Yeah, let's not go into that.
No, we're not going to go into it, but this is, you know, magazines are in the business of selling magazines.
Right.
And so, sure, Meet Your 2019 Stanley Cup Champions is going to make a little bit of a buzz here in the city of Winnipeg, and it's obviously not written in gospel, and it's not written in stone that it's going to happen. But, you know, a good group of prospects is what they're saying, and I don't think that comes as a surprise to any Winnipeg Jets fans who are keeping a close eye on what Connor Hellebuck's doing night in, night out for a St. John's Ice Caps team.
And what I think is a more interesting conversation, which I believe we're going to have later on this hour, is now that you have all of these prospects, how do you develop them? And that brings up the question of, does Nikolai Ehlers play in the NHL next year? Does Nick Patan play in the NHL next year? Does Connor Hellebuck play another year in the AHL next year? You have now an embarrassment of riches, and you have decisions to make as far as where they're best suited. And when you talk about some of the UFAs that the Winnipeg Jets have coming up, so Drew Stafford, Michael Frolik, Lee Stempniak, Jiří Tlusty, how many of those guys are going to be signed, and how many of those guys can be replaced by some of the prospects in the Jets system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, you had Adam Lowry essentially replacing Olli Jokinen as the third-line center for the Jets last year. So are you going to have a situation where possibly one of those wing positions in the top nine is replaced with a guy like Nikolai Ehlers? Josh Morrissey, another guy. I think we'd all agree that Josh Morrissey this year, even though he might not be putting up the same numbers for the Kelowna Rockets that he was last year with Prince Albert, I think Josh Morrissey, I mean, you could argue that he should be in the AHL this year, and he's ready to take the next step to the NHL next year. So you have all of these great questions that are going to be answered in the next 1, 2, 3 years as far as who gets the opportunity. Because what we've seen this year, aside from Adam Lowry, of course, as a rookie, we haven't seen that many guys get called up for the AHL and actually play significant minutes. No offense to guys like Cormier, Klingberg, and Odell, who's obviously going to play tonight, but they just haven't played a lot.
Sure.
And so in years to come, you're going to see some of these younger guys.
But I think to your point there, Ezzie, I think it says a lot about the organization and the patience they're willing to demonstrate.
Yep.
When you haven't even heard a possibility that guys like Kozmichuk or Lapon are even on the radar of being called up. Now, I don't follow the Ice Caps close enough to know if it's a function of they would just be completely overwhelmed in the NHL, which I think to some extent is probably the case, or if it's a function of them simply the organization feels that coming to Winnipeg and playing 6 minutes a game is not of benefit of their time, where, you know, they can spend that time learning and, you know, and getting more confidence under their belt in the AHL.
Right. And a lot of what you see in the NHL is players in the AHL will get their opportunity due to injuries. And there's obviously plans for certain players. Will they get NHL time? Who's first in line? And you've seen the Klingbergs and the Odells get called up before the Kozmichuks and the Lapons, but that's because this is their first AHL year. And Adam Lowry spent an entire year in the AHL before they called him up. So I think you're right, Drew. Right now, the Winnipeg Jets organization has shown that they're patient, and they've done a great job not only in drafting players but developing players. They won't rush a guy. Kevin Cheveldayoff and Craig Heisinger will not rush a guy to the NHL if they don't feel that he's ready. So, again, you know, these are great conversations to have, Drew, at the water cooler. You know, will Nikolai Ehlers play in the NHL next year? Will Josh Morrissey play in the NHL next year? Only time will tell.
Exactly right. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to bring in Ken Campbell from the Hockey News, and we'll talk more about the Jets prospects, and we'll touch on the trade deadline that passed earlier in the week with Ken as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca, brought to you by MTS.
1:15 in the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by analyst Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Hockey News, Ken Campbell. Ken, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, of course, Ken. You do realize, though, that there are people who are going to be sitting outside along a parade route for the next 4 years here in Winnipeg, and it gets very cold in winter.
I can imagine. Yeah, I guess along 40 Avenue. Yeah, they better set up now because it's a coming.
Yeah,
2019. We're predicting it, boy.
And you're caught.
Like planted in cheek.
Yeah, of course. We totally get that. Obviously, the article in the magazine, the headline made waves in Winnipeg earlier in the week. You know, is it just a function of the prospects playing with the Jets so far, or not even the prospects? I guess the young players playing with the Jets right now, and the what appears to be a very solid pipeline coming through the CHL and the NCAA.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. With the guys that they have, the under 22 guys with, you know, Mark Scheifele, Jacob Trouba, Adam Lowry, and, you know, Ben Chariot's been in and out, there as well. You know, I mean, that's a pretty good, group of, young players on their way up. And then, of course, you know, their prospects. I mean, you know, we rank the top prospects from 1 to 50, the prospects outside the NHL. And four of the Jets prospects, Nikolai Ehlers, Josh Morrissey, Joel Armia, and Nick Patan, all came in the top 50. So that's a pretty good compliment to the work that, Marcel Comeau and everyone's done there drafting and developing the players. And, I mean, I just want to make sure that everyone knows that, you know, we don't just pull this out of the air. You know, when we rank these prospects and when we rank the teams, we talk to, you know, the scouts and the directors of player personnel, and we get them to rank, you know, to give us their rankings, and we take that from their rankings. So this isn't just us saying, you know, hey, Nikolai Ehlers is the fourth best player outside the NHL right now. This is, you know, a lot of people who watch a lot of hockey and do it for a living that are saying that as well. So there's a fair bit of credence to it.
Ken, Drew and I were arguing about this a little bit. You know, we were arguing politely. We never argue not politely. But when you look at the draft rankings and you separate the draft rankings from, you know, the prediction, in your opinion, because you've been with the Hockey News for a long time now, but the prediction 2019 Stanley Cup champions, that wasn't the main focus. It was the fact that the Jets have the top prospects. So was it not to be taken a little bit tongue-in-cheek?
Oh yeah, a little. I mean, how can we? You know, we predicted Buffalo's going to Stanley Cup in 2020. So, you know, not 2022, 2020. So I mean, you know, I mean, yes, it is to be taken a little tongue in cheek. It's supposed to be taken that, you know, this is a team on the rise, and you know what? Okay, I mean, you can't really. I can't even predict who's going to win the Stanley Cup this year, let alone who's going to win it 4 years from now. But I think what it tells people, and what it should tell people in Winnipeg, and what it should tell people in the hockey world, is that the Winnipeg Jets will be a serious Stanley Cup contender in 2019. You know, which means they should be, you know, if these guys turn out and if they stay on the trajectory they're on, you know, people should expect this team to be playing at the very least in the Western Conference Final. You know, maybe winning it, maybe not, but this should be a team that for the foreseeable future couple of years should be a Stanley Cup contender. And I think that's what we're trying to say. I mean, you know as well as anybody that so many things have to go so many ways for a team to win the Stanley Cup. You know, a couple of guys get hurt or a goalie gets hot or, you know, whatever. But I think the message is that this team is on the rise, and that by, you know, the 2018-19 season, this team should be one of those teams that we're talking about that has a legitimate shot at winning the Stanley Cup.
Ken, Drew and I were also talking about this earlier, this notion. I know Craig Custance for ESPN wrote about this a little bit earlier in the season, that a lot of players have Winnipeg as a place that they don't want to go when it comes to their no-trade clause. But do you think that winning is actually going to change that and more players are going to want to come to Winnipeg? And in turn, do you think that that puts more pressure on the Winnipeg Jets to kind of hit these home runs with their draft picks because they know that they're not going to be a number one destination for free agents?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's, I think that's a reality. And I mean, whether it's perception, even if it's just perception, then at some point perception becomes reality, right? And the fact of the matter is I don't doubt that most of the guys who have.
Looks like we may have lost Ken there. Ken, are you there?
Oh, hello. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Still here.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't doubt that most guys, when they have a list of teams that they submit that they to which they don't want to be traded, on the vast majority of those lists, Winnipeg's on it, and so is Edmonton, and so is probably Montreal, and so are most of the Canadian teams. And yeah, that does necessitate the value of having good, not only good drafting, but good developing. And, you know, I noticed when just before I came on, you guys were talking about, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff doesn't want to rush anybody into the NHL. And, you know, you take the Detroit model where they almost give their prospects too much time in the minors. But, you know, you see what the result is. And so, yeah, I think the fact that Winnipeg's in the situation it's in, it's absolutely imperative upon them to be able to draft and develop their own players. And, you know, winning will change things. I don't know that Winnipeg will ever be the number one destination for NHL free agents, but certainly if they put together a winning program and they're a contending team and they're always there, you know, they'll start attracting players. And as Kevin Cheveldayoff told me, he said, you know, I mean, once we get the players here, they see how good it is. But, you know, that's the challenge, is actually getting the players there.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Ken Campbell from the Hockey News. Ken, want to move away from the article and move sort of look back at the trade deadline that just passed this previous Monday. You're actually right about it, and it's sort of fitting with the Jets in Nashville tonight. You write about it on your blog on the Hockey News. You write about Philippe Forsberg and the great season he's having, and I mean, he's been absolutely tremendous for the Predators. And you look at the Preds, and they've been atop the NHL for, you know, much of the year, and, you know, very strong in terms of the President's Cup. President's Trophy possibilities, 2 points behind the Ducks now. They really didn't do anything at the trade deadline. Of course, they acquired Franzen and Santarelli earlier on, a couple weeks prior to the trade deadline. Do you think they're going to look back at this past Monday and say they wish they had acquired another top six player, and that could potentially be their downfall when it comes to getting to the Western Conference, to being Western Conference champions or getting to the Western Conference finals?
Well, I'm not sure, because I mean, you know, if you take it in context, I don't think any time, you know, before the season anybody was even picking these guys to make the playoffs. In fact, I think we picked the Jets to finish last in their division, and I think we picked Nashville to finish second last in that division. So, I mean, for you know, I mean, when you look at it that way, I mean, they've kind of come out of nowhere and really overachieved in a lot of ways. And that, you know, granted, they have hit a real rough spot here. I think they've lost
five in a row.
Is it five in a row? Yeah. They've lost five in a row, and they're really hitting a bit of a rough spot here. But you know, I think that, you know, they made that deal for Santarelli and for Franzen, and they did it early. They probably overpaid a little bit. If they had waited a little longer and done it on Monday, you know, maybe they would have gotten him for cheaper. And really, I mean, guys, if they hadn't done the Franzen and Santarelli deal before Monday and had done it Monday, then everybody would be saying, oh, look at what they did at the trade deadline, when, you know, when actually they did their work just before the trade deadline, the same way a lot of other teams have been doing as well. So, no, I don't think they're going to look back and sort of rue not getting guys. And, you know, for all we know, they did try to get some guys and maybe just struck out and the price was too high, because, you know, some of the guys that ended up getting traded probably, you know, the team's overpaid a little bit. So, you know, I think they're probably pretty happy where they are. I they're probably a little bit nervous right now about how they've been playing lately. And, you know, and I mean, I look at that the Western Conference. I mean, what if LA sneaks into that last spot and Nashville wins the conference? Wow, you know.
Hell of a reward.
Great, you finished first place. Wow, what's your reward? Oh, you get to play the Stanley Cup champions. Great, you know. So, yeah, I think they're probably pretty happy where they are.
Ken, in the Hockey News trade deadline preview, you had a really good article about Phil Kessel. It was a nice long article, and I really enjoyed reading it. And obviously, he wasn't moved prior to the trade deadline. And last week, or actually this past week, he came out and he had those comments after the trade deadline about not really liking how the media was treating Dion Phaneuf. How do you see this playing out, I guess I should say? Do you think that Phil Kessel is out of Toronto, and how do you, I guess, how did you react to his comments?
Well, I think that the first thing, I think, with respect to the comments to the whole sort of carping about the media here is well, first of all, I want to know all these media people that are saying these terrible things about Dion Phaneuf. you know, like Jerry Seinfeld said, who are these people? I mean, I don't see it. I see people questioning his ability. I see people questioning sometimes his leadership. I see people saying that he's not a top four defenseman. I see people saying that he makes too much money. Last time I checked, those were all fair comments. That's not, you know, that's not going after a guy. That's being in a market where people, you know about hockey and analyze it and can see what's in front of them. You know, the tweet on TSN, that's a completely different, you know, that's a completely separate, separate matter. That was a mistake by someone. Someone fell asleep at the switch and a very unfortunate, very vulgar tweet got tweeted about Dion Phaneuf. But that's got nothing to do with the Toronto media or any media for that matter. So I just don't think that he was on the mark with that one. You know, I think with Dion Phaneuf, he's trying. He tries his best. He wants to make a difference. He wants to be a guy that does great things out there, but his skill set is such that he can't. And he's on the hook for 7 more years at $7 million, and that is just flat out a terrible contract. So I've said that. A lot of people have said that. And to me, that's not being unfair to Dion Phaneuf. That's just fair comment. Getting to your Kessel thing, I'm not 100% sure he's actually going to get traded out of here because, you know, I just don't know that it solves the problem. I mean, Kessel he's really gone dry through this whole thing, and he's on a big ticket, but, you know, they really do have a really, really, it's not a good team. This is not a good team, and they've got a lot of places where they could shore things up. It's so funny because when Matt Sundin was here, you know, all anybody ever talked about was, you know, Matt Sundin doesn't have wingers who can play with him. And now, you know, now it's the other way around. Phil Kessel doesn't have a centerman. You know, Phil Kessel doesn't have good line mates. So I'm not sure they'll be able to move that contract so easily. I think Phaneuf will be gone in the summer. I think that one's done. He was almost traded at the trade deadline. Detroit was interested, and Toronto just wanted too much. And I think Toronto has to come to the realization that if you trade Dion Phaneuf, what you get back is 7 years and $7 million in cap space.
Yeah,
you're not getting anything else back. Like, nobody's going to take that contract, take the money, take the term, take the risk, and give you an asset. You know, they're just going to take that, and what you're getting back is the cap space. So I think he's gone. But Kessel, I'm not sure. I don't imagine he's going to play out the whole contract here. I just can't imagine that he could ever take it for that long. But I don't know that it's going to happen, you know, in the foreseeable future.
Ken, we'll let you go on one final question. Another big trade that happened at the deadline. The Rangers acquired Keith Yandle. He's the key piece in the trade from Arizona in exchange for Anthony Duclair, you know, John Moore, a 2016 first-round pick, and then a second-round pick in this coming draft. You know, if this trade doesn't make the Rangers the overwhelming favorite in the East, is there a reason really why they made the trade?
I guess they think they're close. But you know what's funny, guys, is if the playoffs were to start today,
yeah,
they play Pittsburgh in the first round, and one of those teams is going out in the first round. So you know, I mean, I think all you can do is you can just go for it and make your team as good as you can, and then hope for the best in the playoffs, you know, and hope you give yourself a chance to be in that spot. You know, that's an awful lot to give up. I mean, the Rangers, after, I think, the 2017 draft, or what, the ones where they have all the picks that they've given up, they'll have gone 4 years without a first-round pick, and they traded away their best prospect in Anthony Duclair. So it's a huge price to pay. You know, I think it speaks to the fact that they brought in Dan Boyle last year and they thought he was going to be the guy that was going to run their power play and do all those other things, and he really hasn't been able to do it. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, New York just seems to keep making these huge deals, and they seem to keep chugging along as a pretty good team. So, they're one of, a whole bunch of teams. Anybody can win the East. The East is not as strong as the West. It's not even close, in my opinion. I think anybody can win the East. New York could be one of those teams, no question about it.
The East is such a dog's breakfast, it's going to make for an entertaining playoff run.
Exactly.
Ken Campbell from the Hockey News, appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Ken.
Take care.
Let's head to break. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.